So a couple of years ago, a little thing called COVID started happening, didn't it? 2 years ago, can you believe it? And the reason I bring this up is because a couple of years ago, when we all went down in the first lockdown, we all had to stay at home. I was ministering at Braintree Baptist Church then, and we decided that we had to do everything online. So I did the service online for the adults, but we thought as a family it would be good to do a little service for the families in the church, for the children. And so as a family, we endeavoured to do that. And I just want to show you a clip from one that we did a year ago or so. Because it was Palm Sunday service. I just want you to watch some of this clip now before we go on. Welcome, Braintree Baptist Church family. It's Palm Sunday. Woo! Wave your palm leaves. And it's the start of the Easter holiday. Yeah! So I hope that you've also received a link on WhatsApp for making your own palm leaves, and we hope that you've been able to do that. And I'm looking forward to seeing some of the photos that of your palm leaves, and you may have made some really interesting, unique, creative palm leaves. But whatever you've made, we want to shake it today in celebration of Jesus's triumphal entry into Jerusalem, which we celebrate on Palm Sunday. So, as we used to do when we did some children's services, we're going to start by asking you this question. How has your week been? So I'm going to ask these guys how their week's been. Now, it is the start of the Easter holidays, but we've had 3 weeks back at school. So how's it been being back at school, Grace?
Oh, it's been amazing. I've loved seeing all my friends. I've loved catching up. I've enjoyed all the fun activities we've got up to, and everything. It's just been really spectacular.
Excellent, excellent. And what's this about?
Oh, yes. So, the school gave me Easter egg here. And so the school handing out some Easter eggs, since I got some onto one. You can hear that. That's really nice. And then my friend was handing out some Easter eggs, which is really kind to all of us. So I got a little egg here, and I had a sweet that I just ate. So, but it was very, very lovely.
Well, what a catch. And have you been enjoying being back at school?
Yeah, I sit next to my good friend, which is really nice. And yeah, I love being back. It's been wonderful.
Excellent, excellent. How about you, Emma? How's it been?
Amazing and very great.
Speak up so they can hear you.
Amazing.
Amazing.
Yeah, and very great. I am so happy I get to see my friends again, and my teachers. And I just love playing with them and having so much fun with them.
Oh, that's good.
And after school, we saw Grace's friend's puppy.
Oh, ooh, yes. Grace's friend's puppy. Well,
his little puppy.
He was the cookest friend.
Excellent. Will, how's your last 3 weeks been?
It's been amazing, and I've got to play card games with my friends, and I've opened this shop to raise money for charity.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. First I'm hearing of it. What charity is this then?
So what we do is we sell some things that we have, and I made a card shop for people to play card games, and we even made little coupons. And once they buy the stuff, we divide out the money for some of us to keep, and the other of it goes to charity to raise money.
Brilliant! I love that. That's a great idea. Well, as you can see, our kids have loved being back at school these last 3 weeks. I hope that you have too, and that you have a really good Easter holidays. So we're going to start by singing our first song. There you go. So there's a little clip from one of our children's services that we led from home on the sofa. Now, the reason I share that with you, I realise it's not Palm Sunday, okay? just want to clarify that. I realise it's not Palm Sunday, and it probably would have been better to show that on Palm Sunday. But the reason I show you that is what you're presented there with there is this wonderfully smiley, happy family, full of enthusiasm and love for one another and for you who are watching. But what you don't see is the many outtakes that we had in producing even that small clip there. When we started it, it was a novelty. As time went on, it became a hardship. And there was, I think, one or two times where we almost gave up. And we certainly had to sort of minimize the amount we were doing. At one point, we were doing them every week. Can you believe that? And it was good fun to start with, but yes, there were some moments where we all were pulling our hair out and we were all in tears and we were all shouting at each other and it got a little bit sad and discouraging. But we pulled ourselves together and we managed to do it, which was great. But I wish I'd kept those outtakes because I'd have loved to have shown you one of those right now and you'd be like, wow, oh. I mean, it ties in with what Bonnie said, doesn't it, a couple of weeks back in her testimony that Sundays, we do our Sunday best thing still, don't we? We turn up on a Sunday, we dress up accordingly, we still try to present our Sunday best. And we're not always necessarily being as honest or open as perhaps we need to be. Well, the reason I show you that this morning is because today's story is a domestic story. It's a story in a house. And it's a story that gives you insight into what's really bubbling away in the background. Jesus and his disciples were on their way, the Bible story says. Where were they going? Well, they were on their way to Jerusalem, to the grand finale of Jesus's mission. The cross was in sight, just as it is as we enter into Lent. And as they were on their way to Jerusalem, Martha opened her home to him. Now, Mary and Martha lived in Bethany, and that was a small town only a couple of miles away from Jerusalem. And Martha invited Jesus and the gang into her house. Maybe we should ask why. Why did she invite Jesus into her house? Well, was it customary to have a visiting rabbi into your home? Well, it certainly would have been a great honor to have him come into the household. But was it okay for a woman to invite a man into her home in that time and culture, especially a rabbi? It was not the done thing, but Jesus accepted it. We remember, don't we, a couple of weeks back that we looked at the woman at the well, and she spoke to Jesus, and Jesus spoke to her, and crossed all these social and cultural barriers. But I think something's going on here on top of that. I think, actually I know, that Martha already knew Jesus. The woman at the well didn't really know Jesus until they began a conversation. She may have heard of him, but she didn't know him personally. But Martha already knows Jesus personally. If you look at John chapter 11 and 12, you will see that they have a very close relationship. Mary, Martha, and Lazarus too. They're close like family, and he loved them very dearly. This family, he loved them very dearly. So was this meeting pre-arranged? These are the questions that come into my head, by the way. As I read this story, these are the questions that come into my head. Was this meeting pre-arranged? Or was it a spare of the moment thing? We don't know. But Jesus and his gang are now in the house. And we're told that Martha has a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. Now, as a host, shouldn't Mary be helping Martha in the kitchen? As a woman of that time and culture, should she not be in the kitchen? Not up close and personal with the rabbi. Should she be involved in the teaching instead of the food preparations? Well, the answer is no. Not in that time and culture. No, she shouldn't. In that culture, as in many parts of the world today, houses were divided into male spaces and female spaces. And it was very clearly marked. I'm sure they probably didn't graffiti lines across the house or mark them out, but people knew. Mary had crossed an invisible boundary in the social world and within the house. The public room where Jesus and his disciples were was male. The kitchen and other quarters, unseen by outsiders, was female. Only outside where the children played or in the marital bedroom would male and female mix. For a woman to settle down comfortably among the men, as Mary is doing here, was bordering on scandalous, shameful even. In other words, Mary shouldn't be there. But she is. And not just in the room, somewhere at the back, you know, sneaked in. You know how some of us do that sometimes? I think a lot of us would probably like to do that at the back of church, wouldn't we? Instead of having to come through the front here, just sneak in the back. No one will see me. I'll just sit at the back and observe. But she's not even doing that. She is right front and centre at the Lord's feet, which was another male role. The theologian Tom Wright notes that sitting at someone's feet doesn't mean like a devoted dog staring lovingly at its master, or a lovesick teenager gawping at her pop idol. Sitting at someone's feet in this way means learning from someone. It's the posture of a student to their rabbi, their teacher. But being a student was a male role. Rabbis didn't have female students, but Jesus appears to be allowing it. Mary has brazenly taken her place as a would-be student of Jesus, and Martha, as well as Jesus' disciples, wouldn't have been able to take their eyes off her. I'm sure that there were feelings of awkwardness. They would feel uncomfortable and confused. Why is Jesus allowing this? This is scandalous. Well, let's turn our attention to Martha now. Now, Jesus had 12 close disciples. That's at least 13 people that Martha is preparing a meal for. Fancy having 13 people over for Sunday lunch, guys? That's quite an order, isn't it? And that's not even mentioning both her and Mary as well. Now, it may well be that it wasn't just them either. There may have been a crowd following Jesus, as there often was. So goodness knows how many people she was catering for on this particular day. And Martha is desperately trying to manage all the duties of a good hostess, to abide by all the cultural norms and expectations of women at that time. And she's doing it without any help from her sister. Mary has got to be the younger sister. Am I right? Surely she's got to be the younger sister, the one that always does their own thing. The one that doesn't think about the cost of it to others. And the one that always gets away with it. You can't tell I'm an older brother, can you? Well, if you want to know more about Mary and her scandalous ways, I think they're wonderful ways, but scandalous in that time nonetheless, then check out John chapter 12. It gives a lot more insight into Mary's character. But what we know is Martha is getting a little exasperated as time goes on. Why? Because she had many preparations that need to be made, many tasks that needed doing. How many of us today can relate to that feeling at the moment? Many things we've got to do, many things that need to be prepared. And Mary wasn't helping her, as she should be. And Martha reaches boiling point, a bit like us in our outtakes that you will never get to see. Martha reaches boiling point. She says, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me." You can just imagine it, can't you? I mean, she's blowing her top right now. She's saying, "Lord, do you not care? Can you not see? I'm all alone. This is too much for me. I'm busting my gut in the kitchen, trying to make you all a nice supper, and I'm doing it all on my own, by the way. Mary isn't even helping. Why haven't you intervened? Why haven't you commanded her to come and help me? Her place is in the kitchen with me, not here with you. Can't you see the injustice of it all? Can't you see how wrong all of this is?" But Jesus does care. Jesus does see. And he can see what's wrong. But his reply is not what Martha was expecting. He can see fully why she is exasperated, and he loves her deeply. And he wants the best for her. "Martha, Martha," he says. The repetition suggests empathy and love, but with a little hint of rebuke coming. He says, "You are worried and upset about many things." You can see Martha thinking, can't you, at this point? "Yes, that's exactly right. I am. There's loads to do." See, Jesus has been paying attention. He's not clueless or indifferent to her situation, but he goes on. "But, Martha, few things are needed, or indeed only one." "Yes," thinks Martha, "I know what's needed. The one thing that's needed is that Mary needs to get off her butt and come in the kitchen and work with me. She shouldn't be in here with you, with the men. She should be with me in the kitchen." But Jesus then goes on to say, "Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her." Ouch. How many times have we used that word in these encounters with Jesus? Ouch. Or what? Or poof. I don't understand what just happened there. Did he really just say that? What? Typical man, he just doesn't get it, does he? Hey? Jesus says the unexpected again. He has a habit of doing the unexpected, by the way. If you follow him, you'll know that. If you haven't yet followed him and you want to follow him, just be prepared that he will do some stuff that seems a little out there, okay? And Martha's reply to him is, well, we don't know what she says or thinks or feels, because that's it. End of story. End of chapter 10 of Luke. The next chapter moves on to Jesus praying and teaching his disciples how to pray. No more of this story is given. How does Martha respond? We don't know. So I've used my imagination, and I've come up with some possibilities, okay? Does Martha chuck her apron off, sling the pans, and sit down at Jesus' feet like Mary, embracing Jesus' radical inclusion of women in the kingdom of God? We don't know. Does she have a rant at Jesus saying how he's a typical man and he just doesn't get it? We don't know. Does she reject what Jesus says, go back in the kitchen and feel incredibly bitter, upset and resentful? We don't know. This is my favourite idea, by the way. Does a fight break out between the sisters right there in front of Jesus? I just am picturing this, thinking, I could just see it, you know, I could just see it, you know. But we don't know. We are left in suspense. We're left with Jesus' words hanging in the air. We're left to ponder them and the situation and work out what it all means. And it automatically brings you into the story, doesn't it? You can't help but wonder what might have happened next. It involves you. You're hooked. You're in the story. And you've taken sides. Perhaps some of you resonate with Martha's frustrations because that's you too. But let's rewind back to what Jesus encourages Martha to do. Those words that are left hanging in the air as the story concludes. Few things are needed, Jesus says, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. Do you remember us pondering how unusual it was for Mary to be sitting at the feet of Jesus? She's a woman. She's a host. She's a woman. How shameful she's being. What shame she's pouring out on the household. Yet, Jesus hasn't once told her off for doing this, has he? Has he? No. Jesus hasn't pushed her away, back into the kitchen. He hasn't shamed her in front of everyone by insisting that she, as a woman, has no place or business being close to him. In this part of the house, listening to his teaching, desiring to be a student of his. Can you see what Jesus is doing here? Very publicly, what he's doing for Mary. He's including her. He endorses her actions. He doesn't condemn them. He's elevating her status in front of all of these men. And so when he says to Martha, "You only need to worry about one thing," he's saying, "Come join me. Join the party. Join Mary in receiving what I have for you." You see, Martha's so busy preparing the meal in the kitchen that she hasn't seen what Jesus is preparing for her. Inclusion, elevation of status, life in all its fullness. Jesus once again turns things on their head. Jesus is radical. And this is the topsy-turvy nature of the kingdom of God that Jesus is bringing. But this isn't a passage fundamentally about women's rights or personality types, activist versus the contemplative, or even about cultural norms. This is a passage about Jesus' radical, boundary-smashing, overflowing, life-giving love. Tom Wright describes it in this way. Jesus' valuation of each human being is based on the overflowing love of God, which, like a great river bursting its banks, goes out into a parched countryside and irrigates those parts of human society which until now had remained barren and unfruitful. This is about God's kingdom, his rule and his reign, coming on earth in this domestic situation as it is in heaven. And isn't this what Jesus encourages us to pray in the Lord's Prayer, which is in the next chapter of Luke? Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth, in this place, here now, as it is in heaven. You see, Mary stands for all those people, irrespective of their gender or status, position, culture, or anything else, who, when they hear Jesus speaking about this new kingdom, know that God is calling them to listen carefully so that they can speak it too. We saw this with the Samaritan woman several weeks ago, didn't we? Once she experienced Jesus' life-giving message, she couldn't contain it. It spilled up and it overflowed, and it brought life to many, many more people. So how about you this morning? How open are you to giving yourself to Jesus, as Mary did? Of embracing all that he has for you, of allowing him to reset the boundaries of who you are and what you have to offer, of embracing his rule and reign, of saying his kingdom come and his will be done, not mine. How open are you to giving yourself to Jesus? And secondly, what are you allowing to hold you back from doing this right now? Like Martha, there were many things occupying her mind and her time. What are you allowing to hold you back from embracing Jesus and what he has for you? What cultural or social norms are you allowing to shape who you are rather than who Jesus says you are? What lies have you received in your life that have limited your horizons? What fears have you allowed to creep in and consume you and stop you from stepping out in faith? And lastly, what steps today could you take toward embracing Jesus and all that he has for you? How might you sit at his feet and learn from him this Lent? In what ways can you put down the pots and the pans of your life and make time to simply be with your Maker and receive his life-giving words? To embrace his radical, barrier-smashing love, life, and purpose for each one of you. Like Mary and Martha, Jesus knows you completely, and he loves you deeply, and he is seeking to welcome you into his family. He's welcoming you to participate in what he is doing, in building the kingdom of God, of seeing it come here and now as it is in heaven. So what's stopping you from receiving this invitation today? What do you need to lay down.